Multiple Wisconsin municipalities and residents have filed lawsuits this month against companies they say are responsible for PFAS contamination in their water systems. Residents in the town of Stella in north central Wisconsin announced a suit against paper manufacturers and the 3M company. The city of Eau Claire announced a suit against various manufacturers of products containing PFAS chemicals. And earlier this summer, the town of Campbell on French Island filed a legal claim against the city of La Crosse that could also turn into a lawsuit. This local litigation comes as large corporations like DuPont and 3M are proposing settlements in federal suits over PFAS contamination. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call has expressed his opposition to those settlements, saying they don't go far enough. Residents affected by PFAS pollution are left wondering what impact these suits could have when it comes to remediating current contamination and preventing future pollution. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these PFAS lawsuits in Wisconsin? Do you think lawsuits could help resolve some of the contamination issues? How should polluters be held accountable, if at all? Do you want to see regulation to prevent future pollution? Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Tony Wilken-Gibbard is Executive Director of Midwest Environmental Advocates. Tony, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Why are we seeing this wave of suits over the, really, just the last few months here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think there are a few reasons for that. One reason, of course, is that PFAS are a significant concern in many communities across Wisconsin. They're spread throughout the environment. And more communities are realizing that they have significant PFAS contamination in their water supplies in particular. Another reason, I think, has to do with just the historical context of where we are in the process of confronting the significant environmental concern. PFAS are still largely considered emerging contaminants. And what that really means is not that they're emerging into the environment, but that our knowledge and our regulatory response to PFAS are still emerging. It's not until very, very recently that some of our main environmental laws have been updated to address PFAS, and we still have a long way to go. I think another kind of just important background consideration here is the way in which our country deals with toxic chemicals in general. We allow companies to put chemicals like PFAS into the environment with very minimal and ineffective oversight. And the burden is on the government to prove harm rather than the manufacturer to prove that the chemicals are safe. So we have a system that isn't proactive. And then when we discover that a chemical is cause for concern, like PFAS are, it takes many years for our environmental laws to catch up. And so in the absence of that regulation, one of the only ways that governments or individuals can get any kind of accountability from polluters is through civil tort actions. And the claims that we're talking about here are generally civil tort claims, and they're based on the idea that even if the use or the production of PFAS weren't directly prohibited or regulated at the time, which they weren't, the polluter, the defendant, knew or should have known that there was a significant risk here that PFAS could cause harm, and therefore they should be held responsible for compensating the people in the communities that have been harmed. So we're seeing so many of these kinds of lawsuits because right now at this stage of our response to PFAS, they really are one of the only avenues. And indeed, there is quite a bit of evidence to show that PFAS polluters knew for some time that the products that they were manufacturing posed significant health risks, and they withheld that information and continued to distribute them into the marketplace. And that's why there's quite a bit of power behind these lawsuits that we're now seeing.
And we've been talking in the past tense a little bit, but what is the current state of regulation when it comes to this class of chemicals in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's still evolving. Like I said, just last year, our state set a drinking water standard for PFAS. We set regulations for wastewater dischargers, to limit the amount of PFAS that's being sent into surface waters from places like wastewater treatment facilities. But we haven't yet to see some of the main environmental laws that we have on the federal level, like CERCLA, be updated to reflect the fact that PFAS is a hazardous substance. So when it comes to holding polluters accountable, again, these kinds of civil lawsuits are one of the only avenues that we have. We still don't have a groundwater standard for PFAS in Wisconsin, which is one thing that my organization, MEA, is working on with folks from the Marinette-Peshtigo area.
One more bit of background on these chemicals. If we talk about something like DDT, that, as I understand it, is one chemical. When we say PFAS, it's a group, a big group of different chemicals. Is that part of what's making it difficult to regulate these chemicals, that it's hard to do them as a whole category versus individual subsets of that category?
Yeah, exactly. So the general approach is to regulate individual compounds, specific compounds. And so far, we in Wisconsin, as far as drinking water, we've only regulated PFOA and PFOS, which are two of the most widely studied compounds. But we're talking about a class of hundreds of compounds. And that kind of piecemeal approach, where regulators generally don't have the power or choose not to regulate compounds or chemicals as a class, is again one of the reasons that the process of responding to these kinds of situations is so difficult. The other thing that I would say, and maybe we kind of just skipped over this, is as far as the extent of the PFAS problem, is that these compounds were manufactured and put into products for decades. Products like nonstick cookware, which folks may be aware of, firefighting foam, which is a huge concern throughout the state, also food packaging. So they were manufactured and distributed for decades. They don't break down easily in the environment, and so they're called forever chemicals for that reason. But because they are so ubiquitous in the environment, folks sometimes call them everywhere chemicals. So there is a huge challenge before us. As we've been talking about, these lawsuits are an appropriate initial step, but we have a long way to go.
Let's bring on a caller. Colette is with us in Eagle River. Colette, hi.
Hi, I was wondering about milk organite. If that is tested for PFAS, being it comes from the Milwaukee sewage system and is distributed all statewide through at least Menard.
Colette, thanks for the call. Now, this was in the news a couple years ago. A study found, claimed to find some PFAS chemicals in this particular brand of fertilizer. The company said there weren't significant amounts in there. Is this something that you've been tracking, Tony?
Well, that's one of the reasons why it's important to have surface water standards in place so that the state has the ability to regulate what the products that the byproducts of wastewater treatment, including milorganite, but also including the effluent that goes into surface water. I'm generally aware that there is some level of concern about milorganite, and one of the, kind of more generally a concern here is the sludge that has been spread on fields throughout Wisconsin, biosolids, which are similar to milorganite, a byproduct of wastewater treatment that's used as fertilizer. And that's one of the main concerns in the town of Stella and the subject of their lawsuit, that a paper mill that was treating wastewater knew that, or should have known, that there was PFAS included in that sludge that was used as fertilizer in and around their community.
Colette, thanks for that call. We're talking to Midwest Environmental Advocates Executive Director Tony Wilkin-Gibbard about lawsuits over PFAS contamination in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you glad to see Wisconsin residents, in some cases municipalities, suing manufacturers or other sources of these pollutants? How big of an impact do you think these lawsuits could have? Is this a problem in your community, in your local water? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Tony Wilkin-Gibbard. He's the Executive Director of Midwest Environmental Advocates. He's with us today to look at the impact that lawsuits could have on PFAS contamination here in Wisconsin, the class of so-called forever chemicals. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about lawsuits over contamination with this class of chemicals, about regulation, what it is, what it isn't? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls. Ernest is with us in Hayward. Ernest, hi.
Hi. You know, toxic chemicals that we know are toxic should be immediately taxed. You know, you can't ban every chemical, but you can tax something that's toxic. And when you tax something, you have less of it. And new chemicals that are being introduced into the environment should be constantly surveilled. And when it becomes obvious that it is toxic, we should shift taxes onto these toxic chemicals. It's a very simple way to allow the market to function.
Ernest, thanks for the call. Tony, is this a strategy you've seen of not outright banning a particular substance, but taxing it to limit its use, as Ernest hopes?
Well, you know, historically there were taxes on industries that have caused contamination to fund Superfund and other remediation programs. So that has been a strategy that's been used. I definitely agree with the caller that we need more resources to provide proper oversight. And that's one of the problems that we have, is that it's impossible for the EPA to keep up with the number of compounds that are being introduced into the environment on an annual basis. There is just not enough funding and capacity to go around to do any kind of reasonable risk assessment. And as we talked about earlier, the way the system is set up is that the burden is on the government to show that something is harmful, and that can be a very intensive process, rather than on the producer to show that their chemical is safe. And that, I mean, that would be another way to just ensure that the cost of safety is borne by the producer or the manufacturer, if they were responsible for conducting the tests and showing that a product is safe before they put it out in the environment. So it might have, in some ways, a similar function as a tax, like the caller suggests.
Thanks for that call, Ernest. And Tony, Ernest mentioned surveillance, trying to find these chemicals. I understand there's some controversy over that in Wisconsin. The state DNR wants to be able to monitor potential polluters for PFAS emissions. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and other business groups say no, they don't have the authority to do that. What's the view on that from where you're sitting?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lawsuit filed, I believe, in 2022, last year, by Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce to limit DNR's testing authority of wastewater dischargers. So there was, WMC filed a lawsuit about that testing. Events have kind of overtaken that controversy, thankfully, because we now have clear legal authority for DNR to conduct that testing and that surveillance, because we have that surface water quality standard for PFOA and PFOS on the books. The authority existed prior to that, as the Jefferson County Court found in that lawsuit and sided with the state. But we kind of have a belt and suspenders situation now, because thankfully the law has developed in the interim. Another lawsuit that is really critical here is WMC's lawsuit, again, against the Department of Natural Resources over its response to PFAS. But this lawsuit is over the spills law. And the spills law is the main protection that we have in the state of Wisconsin against all toxic spills. And WMC is alleging that the state illegally considers PFAS compounds to be hazardous substances under the spills law. They claim that the state must go through a complicated rulemaking process to define PFAS compounds as hazardous before PFAS polluters are responsible for reporting those discharges and investigating them and cleaning them up. And that is a pending matter that is before the Wisconsin Court of Appeals that will have huge significance for how our state is able to respond to these matters and hold polluters accountable. It is a more efficient way of ensuring that there is accountability than these piecemeal lawsuits that have to be brought by individual municipalities or even individual homeowners and families, it's important that there be a statewide regulatory response to hold polluters accountable. And that's exactly what the spills law is, but it is under threat in this litigation. So we see all kinds of lawsuits. We see civil suits against polluters, and then we see industry groups that represent polluters that are trying to slow and weaken the process of a governmental or a state response to PFAS.
Let's bring things around to our starting point, Tony. Those civil lawsuits filed by communities or individual residents, often against companies that they allege are responsible for PFAS contamination. What is the bar they have to meet to establish that, yes, in fact, these companies are responsible and they have to pay for it?
Well, there are hundreds of lawsuits, they all have different claims and different facts. So I can't speak to the particularities of of that. But I would say, as a general matter, we're talking about tort claims against responsible parties like PFAS manufacturers or companies that knowingly distributed PFAS. And so there, the real nub of all those claims boil down to that the company knew or should have known that it was creating a risk by distributing PFAS into the environment and profiting from the sale of PFAS-containing products. And, like we talked about, DuPont, just as an example, had known for decades that there was ample reason to be concerned about very, very serious health effects of the PFAS compounds that it was manufacturing and putting into commerce, because even some of its own workers were experiencing very, very serious health effects. That, in 2001, there was a class action lawsuit in West Virginia, which is the subject of the movie Dark Waters. And there was ample evidence in that class action lawsuit about DuPont's knowledge. So it really comes down to, in these civil cases, the knowledge of the responsible party about the risk that they were creating to the people who have been harmed.
Thanks to our guest, Tony Wilkin-Gibbard, Executive Director of Midwest Environmental Advocates. He joined us to talk about lawsuits over PFAS contamination in Wisconsin, what they can mean for regulations, along with solutions to current contamination problems and prevention of future pollution. Now, the city of Milwaukee has organizations, ordinances, and policies aimed at trying to protect residents from lead poisoning. But as Wisconsin Watch reporter Farah Anderson reports, the city often fails to hold landlords accountable for lead hazards that are poisoning tenants and their families.
Milwaukee resident Denise Honegger is sitting on the porch of a house off Locust Street in North Milwaukee. It's her first house that's been lead-free in 6 years.
There is not one speck of lead in my house now. I'm so happy. I got tears in my eyes. I'm so happy.
She moved into a house in 2017 that had lead, and then another, and another, and another. Her daughter and grandchild were both hospitalized from lead poisoning, and each time they moved, they thought they were safe. But when their landlords refused to address the lead in each property, they left.
We were homeless and in a hotel for a year at a time. I paid out my pocket. Nobody was helping us. We lost everything in each house.
Almost 5% of Milwaukee children under 6 tested in 2021 had blood lead levels above 5 micrograms per deciliter. More than half of the city's residents are renters, and lead poisoning rates are highest in neighborhoods where more people rent. Last year, the city's Common Council created more penalties for landlords who don't comply with government orders to fix lead hazards by removing lead paint or dust. But from July 2022 to June 2023, the city's health department issued just 26 lead-related citations to city landlords. And a Wisconsin Watch review of city records showed 9 of those citations were dropped because of out-of-date inspections. Michael Mannon is director of home environmental health for the city. He says many landlords fail to comply with lead abatement orders.
And the problem here is that it's a lack of willingness and engagement on the landlord's part to do their duty, because they're the ones collecting rent. They have to maintain the property.
The Common Council also tried to protect renters from retaliation if they complained about lead. But often, renters are too scared to report or don't know how to complain. And if they move out because of lead, landlords can sue for rent collection. That's what happened to Deanna Branch. Her son Aiden was hospitalized twice for severe lead poisoning from old paint in a Milwaukee rental property. Child Protective Services told her Aiden couldn't be discharged if she couldn't provide a safe home. She left the house and moved in with family that same day.
Instead of depressed and angry, I should have been upset that they were like literally trying to blame me for just trying to provide a house for my son. I didn't think about it like that at the time. I thought about like, oh my God, like I'm gonna lose my kids. I'm a terrible mother.
For the city to order lead remediation, a child has to test at 15 micrograms per deciliter. That's 4 times higher than what the CDC calls a concerning lead level. At that point, the city will cover the cost of abatement. Brittany Shanick is a lawyer with Legal Action of Wisconsin. She represents clients in tenant-landlord lawsuits involving lead.
There's nothing to incentivize a landlord from doing that lead abatement up front, you know, out of their own bottom line.
Since 2011, the state of Wisconsin has passed several statutes making it difficult for cities to set up proactive rental inspections, which could catch lead hazards before tenants move in. Some municipalities like Eau Claire and Racine have still created rental inspection programs. Heiner Giese is a lawyer who represents landlords in the Rental Property Association of Wisconsin. Giese says Milwaukee could use similar programs to protect kids from lead.
The city just says it doesn't have the money to do those. That's the real problem, but they can't do them.
Deanna Branch is now in a lead-free home. She formed the Coalition on Lead Emergency in 2018 to make sure other parents don't have to experience what she did.
So I just felt like as a mother, I was definitely failing him because I didn't know the answer. And as a parent, you want to know the solution. You want to know how to best help your child.
The Milwaukee Health Department says they'll be ramping up enforcement against landlords this fall. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Farrah Anderson.
For more information about Wisconsin Watch's investigation into lead hazards in Milwaukee rental properties, visit wisconsinwatch.org.